Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Alexis the Midwife.
And I'm Becky the Doula.
Welcome to Notes from the Mother Box, where we will be having real and frank conversations about the highs and lows of the parenting journey. We are delighted that we have a fantastic partnership this season with Sophie Le Giraffe, especially because this year is Sophie's 60th birthday.
And we have some exciting things lined up in Sophie's honour across this season, including a special birthday celebration episode.
If you want to see the full range of Sophie Le Giraffe products, head over to sophielegiraffe.co.uk. So pop the kettle on, pour yourself a cuppa, get comfy and enjoy this week's episode of Notes from the Mother Box. Today, we'd love to welcome Kira Jansen to the show. Kira is a mother, voiceover artist, and actor. Kira, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Kira, as a midwife and doula, obviously, we love a birth story, and then we know you've got two gorgeous boys. So, would you mind going back and telling us what your pregnancies and births were like?
Yeah, absolutely. God, it feels like a long time ago now because Archie, my eldest, is 7 this year and Albie, he's going to be 3. But I was 27 when I had Archie. So it was all just a brand new experience for me. I just thought it was going to be, you know, quite straightforward. Get pregnant, have a baby. Lovely. That's it. And again, it's difficult, isn't it, with pregnant women listening to birth stories because they're all different, but that's what this is all about,
absolutely.
I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, Archie, I was in labour for 96 hours. So that was fun. Yeah,
that was long.
Isn't it long? That is ridiculous, isn't it?
It is.
Very unusual, I think, I should probably add.
To be fair, for first babies, if we include the latent phase, which is the early part of labour, mm-hmm. and I always teach this when I do my antenatal classes, it can be a couple of hours, Kira. It could be a couple, 2 or 3 days. So actually, and Becky will tell you this as well, because as a doula that she's worked with so many women over the years where she gets called as soon as things start happening. Becky, the amount of times with primips, which is people having their first babies, that you've gone and you've spent a few days with them has got to be often.
Yeah, definitely. We don't talk about the latent phase enough to know what to expect. And I think that quite often, and I mean, I ballsed it up myself, and I should have known better. I'd been doing births for years, but I think we get up and we get going as soon as those contractions come, whereas actually what we should do is go to bed and almost try and ignore it and kind of, but sometimes the latent phase can also be quite painful. So it's really hard, isn't it, to know what's
absolutely
what with it all.
And even though you can't go into a deep sleep, if you can try and rest, but you see, and Kira, I'm sure you experienced this, it's one thing us saying this, it's quite another, especially with the excitement that comes with the fact things are starting and you know you're going to meet your baby, actually really trying to rest and take it very slowly and being very intentional about that in the early parts of the labour can be easier said than done, basically.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I suffer really badly, actually, with health anxiety. So it was really difficult for me to believe that actually there wasn't something wrong, but this is what happens, you know. So I was kind of battling with all of that, thinking, oh, I couldn't really just relax into it and say, this is how it goes. And also, you know, I was really young and I had absolutely no idea. I was the first of my friends. No one had, you know, I had no one to really guide me. I actually did have private midwives, which which was a saving grace for me because, you know, I just couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, it's lovely to have that continuity, isn't it? And sort of know the people and have that familiar face with private midwives, for
that,
sure.
Yeah, that was what it was for me because I did think, you know, in this situation and it goes on longer than an hour, you know, what did I know? I'll see the same people. And I'm so glad because, you know, she, especially one of the lovely ladies, she just was with me, you know, pretty much for 9 months. So, and I still to this day, I'm like, what would I have done without you? But no, and then actually after those 96 hours to, you know, naively, I saw it written down, you know, and I thought, God, is that what I've been through? But like you said, that would have been including it, all of it. So it's probably, it's probably all relevant, but in the end, and I think Archie was pushing with the wrong part of his head, and that to me means nothing, but probably to you means everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the position of the baby, absolutely. Yeah. And the part of the presenting part that basically has impact with the cervix as you're having those surges, those contractions, and as the baby's, and the back upper part of the baby's head seems to have the best impact, and it's directly against babies. And was your baby back to back, Kira?
No, he wasn't actually. He was apparently sort of in the right position, but
slightly tilted head maybe.
Well, he must have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they said, you know, in the end, this is never going to happen naturally for you, and you know, to be honest, I was just more exhausted than anything else after those however many days. And then they had to do an emergency C-section, which actually was brilliant. Actually, that, you know, the way it was all done was so impressive how it was all handled. And then that was that, really. And then the rest is a bit of a blur.
I'm not surprised. The thing is, love, as well, when you've got a baby presenting that way, what happens is your body has to contract even harder to try and get the baby in the right position. So not only was it really long, but your surges would have been through the roof. I mean,
yeah, they were.
Presumably it felt intense.
it was, but again, I've got nothing to relate it to, and I thought, like, you know, I'm not even, I know that I didn't get very far along, so I thought, like, if this, you know, as the further this goes, the worse it's going to become pain-wise, surely. But actually, they were very intense, and that's why they decided to give me, they gave me some pethidine, which, for me personally it was the most bizarre experience I've ever had in my life. And
it's a bit out of body, isn't it?
It's exactly what it is. And I've never, you know, I'm terrified of paracetamol, so I've never touched a drug in my life. So I'm imagining that this is what it must have been, you know, at these Glastonbury.
Kira, it's an opiate, so it's part of that same family as morphine and everything like this.
Now I know.
Absolutely. So, and for somebody like you say who's never experienced anything like that before, it probably was. And this is why pethidine and diamorphine, they often get referred to as Marmite medications, which is like women say, oh my goodness, that was amazing and I loved it. And other women will say, oh my goodness, I never want to have that again. I felt like it just felt so bizarre. I felt out of control.
And so I think it's
such a personal experience, isn't
honestly
it?
And I just remember having gas and air, and I had the gas, you know, thingy on my shoulder, and like my brain was telling me, Kira, you know that's gas and air. And all I could see, and I mean this 100%, I remember it forever, I could just see a chicken leg on my shoulder. And I was like, no, that is gas and air. Please, I know it is. It was the way, I can't explain. Like, my brain was like, you're right. And your body was like, no, don't put that chicken leg anywhere.
I've heard, and I'm sure Becky's the same, the things that women have said to us while they've been puffing away on the gas and air, or after the surge, the contraction finishes.
Just mental.
Once the gas and air, it's there are some funny moments, let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Just ridiculous. Yeah, so, I mean, after the pethidine, you know, everything was just lovely for me. I just was like, oh, please just stop showing me chicken everywhere and just give me a baby instead.
And there is that bit after a long labour where things aren't progressing and you're working really, really hard. There is that bit, that calm that comes when actually the birth team say, right, you know what, you've done so well, but this is what we need to do and we're going to help you now. And you're like, yes, please help me.
Yeah, exactly. Because you do feel like you can't do very much more.
Yeah. And it feels quite calm because it's quite controlled, isn't it? Everyone goes into action and you're like, okay, brilliant. Now we're getting somewhere. And, you know, at that point, you just need your baby in your arms, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And it's always a bit of a scary thing when you hear emergency C-section, but it was so far from scary. There was no emergency situation, actually. It was just like you said, right, now we need to intervene and this is how we're going to do it.
Another thing that isn't always understood is that emergency C-section tends to refer to a baby that needs to be born via, you know, an abdominal birth, usually within the next hour or so. And so the emergency is just really the fact that it's an unplanned cesarean section rather than the decision was made beforehand.
Yeah.
A crash cesarean section, an urgent cesarean section, we're talking about we need this baby out in the next 10 or 15 minutes, is actually extremely rare.
Yeah.
But I think that gets, it does get a little bit confused, doesn't it?
Well,
because
it's the
word
language,
emergency,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
So. And that's what, you know, put me into panic and then realizing that everybody was sort of, you know, I think they were, I remember when they were sort of doing their thing and the doctors were just talking about what they were going to have for dinner. And I was like, oh, this is nice. Okay. No one's worried about me here. Everyone's just thinking about their dinner and that's good for me.
Sometimes that those normal conversations can be quite comforting, can't they?
Everything. Yeah, it really did.
Oh, fantastic. So when it came to the birth of your second baby, Kira, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So after that, because of they weren't complications, but they just said, look, you can definitely try to do this naturally. But after, I think they said after 10 hours, then we'd have to do a C-section. So it's kind of up to you. And, you know, having just kind of experienced, I guess, kind of both, I thought, do you know what, for me personally and my anxiety around stuff, it just made life easier to say, I think for me, I just want to book this in and know what's going on and have that kind of control. So I had Albie, my husband is Swedish, and we had him in Sweden. So it was an incredible experience, apart from the fact that nobody speaks English, you know, so I had to make sure that everybody, if they use any terminology, please do not utter a word in Swedish. You have to got to all learn English for when I arrive. So actually it was amazing, and it was very calm and you know, I don't know if I should really say it was easy, but it felt, you know, felt a lot more like I knew what I was going in for.
It was planned and it was straightforward.
Yeah.
Did your husband have to sort of be the middle person and explain to you what was going on at times, language-wise?
Yes.
Did he have to do some translation?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, he does all the time. But I think as soon as anybody sort of uttered a word, the glares from me, as in do not speak anything but English, they just stopped. But no, he did have to sort of, he explained quite a few bits and pieces to me when, you know, that were nothing to worry about. But I was like, what is she saying? What are they saying? What's going on? You know?
Absolutely. And of course, then we talk so much about birth. We think about birthing. We make plans. And of course, as you're discussing here, you know, birth has a plan for us. We have a plan for birth. And there are so many variables, aren't there?
Yeah.
So many variables. But this is what ended up being your birth stories. You had two lovely abdominal births.
Yeah.
What was the postnatal period like for you both? Now, was your first baby born in the UK, did you say?
Yes, yep, he was born in there.
And then the second in Sweden.
Yeah.
So what were those two experiences like for you after the babies had been born?
Well, it's something with a C-section. You just kind of, you can't prepare for, can you? It's it's bizarre, and it is absolutely major surgery. And I am a person who just likes to get up and go, and the most impatient person in the world. So for me, it was quite a learning curve to realise that actually, no, you've really got to listen to your body here and take it easy. So it was, I was in the hospital for 2 days, and the midwives and, you know, were just incredible. I mean, God, honestly, you guys are amazing. I just, you know, there were times when I was not even aware, you know, I was probably fast asleep and they'd just taken Archie and changed him, brought him back. And I'll remember them forever. I really will. But yeah, to be honest, I'd say it was a faster recovery than I would have thought. I was probably up and, you know, walking around within, I don't know, a week or so. And then you're just slower, aren't you? It's just weird. And you just need to listen to your body. The second time with Albie, I found a little bit harder actually. You know, I think just, you know, older maybe, and it just, I could feel it in different ways.
And I think there isn't maybe quite as much opportunity for rest when you've got a toddler running around as well, is there? You know, sort of, so that makes it trickier, I think, to not do things.
Yeah,
absolutely. Your mind's in sort of two places, isn't it? You've got a newborn baby and then you've also got an older child. And even if you have support around you to look after the older one, sort of your heart's in two places, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And you just want to be there and you think, I can do this. And then, you know, you get the odd, no, you can't, just sit down. Sit down and stay.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I have to say, I love that, you know, C-section experience for me was, I have to say, it was really brilliant.
So it sounded like you listened to your body, you know, you mobilised gently, but you sort of took your time as well just to make sure you were really supporting your own body as it was healing. What about the actual transition mentally to parenthood? Such a, you know, huge transition for us as parents, and obviously for the babies being born and transitioning into not being in the uterus anymore. Was there anything that you can reflect upon at this point as to how that felt for you and your husband, that transition to parenthood?
Well, Archie, he's from a previous relationship, and actually Archie's dad he's probably my best friend in the world. We have a very unusual relationship. We're all like this.
Amazing.
So I just adore him, and he will be forever, you know, he's part of our life and family. We're a modern family, absolutely.
I love modern family. Does anyone else watch it? It's so good.
Exactly. It's just the best way to describe it as well. Thanks.
Yes.
And, you know, we were very young. He was a couple of years younger than me as well. So I think, to be honest, that mental transition is suddenly, you know, kind of growing up overnight. And the weirdest part is, you know, you've done everyone does all this preparation for birth and how it's going to be and what labor's going to be like. But then you leave the hospital and then you think, hang on, is there a book or something? What do I do now? I have no idea what happens with this part, you know. So there is that kind of adjustment that you kind of just have to, I think just kind of for women actually just sort of happens. Something just kicks in, you know. So I'd say for me, it felt quite natural. I think for him, it was completely different. You know, he was younger. And of course, for men, I can't even imagine. You're just sort of thrown into this situation and you just have to adapt like that, you know.
Yeah.
But it felt, you know, it was wonderful with Archie. It was just, it's just an experience you can't quite sort of, you know, explain.
And I think you have to live it to go through it. I think it's like you say, I feel like, because I talk a lot about the transition into parenthood when I teach my classes and those early months of having a baby, but I just feel like it's so abstract before you've actually gone through it yourself.
Yeah.
And we always talk about how you become the expert of your own baby. Yeah. Like, I'm an expert, but I'm the expert of my three children and you will be the expert of your children. And It's difficult to explain until you're there in the moment, living it and walking the walk, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think also, like, we had worked with, you know, both of us had worked with women before we had our own. So we thought we knew a lot. But actually, nothing really prepares you for going through it yourself.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was just like any other new mum. I was like, I don't know.
Absolutely. I was exactly the same.
Yeah. So you just have to learn on the job, don't you? And kind of do what feels right for you. That's the other thing. There's no right or wrong.
Exactly. And they're all so different, aren't they? Like every baby as well, you know.
Yeah.
Archie and Albie, they're completely, you know, of course they have different fathers, which probably has something to do with it, but they are just different. The whole experience was different, you know, second time round. And what you think you know something and then, you know, another curveball throws at you or something's a lot easier the next time. Or like you said, it's such a unique journey. It really is.
And my expectations, and I say this again, you know, as Becky says before, and I think Becky's very similar to me, actually, even slightly longer before she had her first baby. But I'd been in midwifery for 6 years before I had my first baby.
Wow.
And you could have knocked me down with a feather as to how much of a shock to the system
really?
It was for me. And I was so cocky before I had him. And I remember thinking, so Toby, who's my eldest, who's almost 10 years old now. And I remember before he arrived, just thinking genuinely, I thought this. I was like, I'm going to be fine with waking up in the night because I do night shifts. And also, I totally know what newborn babies are like because I've been a midwife for years.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But I think with that, actually, I was too hard on myself because actually then I found it so much of a surprise how exhausted I felt such a lot of the time. And I had a 9-pound-3 baby and he was insatiably hungry and I struggled with breastfeeding and this, that and the other. And as a midwife, then I felt hugely guilty because I felt like, I'm a midwife, this shouldn't be happening to me. But it absolutely was. And over time, I've learned to be so much kinder with myself and realize, like you say, Kira, babies are all different. Our experiences of parenthood are different each time. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's all part of this journey. Yeah. All part of this learning experience.
And also I say to mums as well in clinic quite a lot, because, you know, often they say, I can't calm the baby down and the baby's crying. And I'm like, do you know what the difference is? Hormones. Because before I had my baby, I would take a crying baby and I would very calmly swaddle and shush and rock. And I'd be like, oh, they're there. And everyone was like, you're so calm. And I was like, I know. And then I had my own baby and I was like, she won't stop crying. And Barney was like, why are you like this? I'm like, I don't know. And then I was like, oh, yes. Because I'm fucking hormonal. I'm like so hormonal right now. So I think we have to give ourselves a break, because not only is it a big thing, but we're also highly hormonal while we're doing
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. You know. And exactly the same. Like you were saying, Becky, again, we could talk about this for months and months, Kira. But I'm thinking also about the fact that I'd had quite a significant tear. I was, you know, bleeding as you do postnatally, my breasts felt like they were just on fire with engorgement. I was sleep deprived.
So glamorous,
isn't it? You know, and funnily, I honestly would do birth again and again and again. I quite enjoyed it. I'm one of those people.
I
quite enjoyed it, but I found the couple of weeks that follow, once the adrenaline goes down, I find that's the toughest bit for me. And we're all different, aren't we? But that's the bit I find with exactly as Becky's saying, I get quite affected by baby blues. And as my estrogen and my progesterone level out, that week afterwards, I felt that each of those three times, quite significantly, it hit me hard.
We hope you're enjoying our chat so far, but now for a little ad break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We are really enjoying partnering with Sophie Le Giraffe for this season of the podcast, and we'd encourage you to head over to their website, sophielegiraffe.co.uk, to discover some brand new Sophie products, as well as the whole range which is available directly on the site. We have been on our social media showcasing just a small sample of what you can find over there, and we'd love to see your photos with Sophie. So please tag them with hashtag SophieLeGiraffeUK and hashtag NotesFromTheMotherBox.
Now back to our chat with Kira.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you forget those times. And I think it's so, like, the hormone thing, it's just the most important thing, because I honestly feel that, like, especially if you say that word to a man, and for a long time before I had children, I was like, hormones, this is just this pretend word, actually, people just say. And that's what we say if we're a bit crazy, and that's fine. And I'm like, that's not a real thing. But actually, my God, it's just, it is this thing that you have no control over that just takes over. And even if your mind is in one place, it's just like, this hormone, whatever he or she is, just has other ideas.
I totally agree. Do you know, Kira, I so agree. I feel like hormones are thrown at us as women in quite a derogatory way. Oh, it's your hormones. Oh, it's their hormones. And so I tend to think about my endocrine system altogether. As time has gone on, and I really sort of realised the impact and the importance it is sort of not just pushing it to one side and going, oh, that's just your hormones like that. But actually, it can affect, your physical health, your mental health. Mm. It's huge. Absolutely massive.
Yeah. And it is that thing after you have a baby, you do have that kind of, you know, when the milk does its thing and you just have those days where you do just, I do remember that. I felt such a sense of calm with Archie, but also this overwhelming emotion, and I was just crying, but I didn't really know why, and I couldn't explain it. And people are like, what's wrong with you? But aren't you so happy? And you're like, of course I'm happy. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know. I don't understand anything about myself.
But we don't learn about it as much here, do we? And actually, Lex and I have both trained abroad in cultures where women mm-hmm. are really nurtured postnatally. And one of the reasons is because what we know is that our hormone system goes up here, so we're on high alert, which is a very clever way of evolution making sure that we respond to our baby. So every time our baby needs us, we respond. But what happens is our blood pressure rises every time they cry or every time they need us, to make us rush to them. So that's great, but that's quite hard on us, on all our systems. And so in cultures where they understand this and it's very talked about, women are put to bed and it's all very calm and quiet and they're fed very nourishing foods and they're given massages to bring the nervous system down. And I think we don't do any of that stuff here, really.
No, and women don't understand it, do they? I didn't understand it before I did further research into it and looked into it. But I was blown away when I found about neuroplasticity and the changes that happen in a woman's brain when she's pregnant. And the fact that that then creates this reactive brain. So listen, Kira, I'm like you, I get health anxiety. And I'll tell you what, because of the changes that happen in the brain, that's even more extremely elevated. So what you find, and you're like, why do I feel like this? And it is, as Becky said, it's very, very clever. It's evolution. It's to create a brain that reacts to their baby's needs. It's so that the human race can continue. But actually feeling it in a personal way, it can feel a lot at times, can't it?
But it needs sometimes is somebody to explain it to you like that, you know? And you say, oh, okay, so that make, you know, you just need that kind of, you need to make sense of things.
Yeah, because then
sometimes.
You know it's normal and you can sort of lean into it and go, okay, I'm going to have a really quiet, calm day then because I need everything to level out. So
And actually we think, I don't know if you ever did this, Kira, obviously very popular these days is like hypnobirthing or calm birthing. And yeah, there you go, exactly. And so you'll know that we talk a lot about environment and the best environment for your birthing hormones and keeping everything low lit and quiet and calm. But then I think women don't quite realise the importance of that going into the postnatal period, in that sort of 2 to 6 week at the very least period after the baby's born. Not so possible, Kira, with second children, as you know, because obviously there's that noise around. But just being a little bit aware of it, paying some attention to the fact that we've got a lot going on hormonally in our bodies and our babies are adjusting hugely to being out here on the other side with us.
Yeah.
Definitely. So Kira, alongside having your two beautiful boys, we saw, because you obviously really brilliantly talk quite openly about the fact that you had two silent miscarriages. I think, were they in your second trimester?
Yes, they were. I've had three now. Recently.
Sorry
we had
to hear
another.
That.
It's all right. Sorry, it's love. It's life, isn't it? And it's just a bit of It sort of throws you, because once you've had two children without any problems, it's, you naively think, you know, I'm a superwoman. I can just, you know, this is, everything's going to be easy for me. And it sort of grounds you quite significantly.
And again, it's something that isn't, I mean, it's such a huge part of the mothering journey. Like, I mean, how many people do we know who have miscarriages, but hardly anyone talks about it openly, which is why we thought it was so wonderful that you do, because it's really important. Otherwise, it's so isolating.
And also, Kira, I love the fact that when we've watched your stories, and for anybody who's been through this, who knows somebody who's been through this, I really, really recommend you go and you look at Kira's Instagram, and we'll put the information in the show notes. But I love the fact that you say, listen, this is something that needs to be spoken about. It's really important. But if you're pregnant and you're later on, and this could be triggering for you, move on. These stories aren't necessarily for you. But for others, you're validating it. You're sharing that experience, and there's solidarity there. It's incredible, you know, that you're doing that for them.
It's funny because it's not something that's ever, it's not a conscious thought of mine. It's just, I mean, for me personally, I know what that is like, you know, if you're pregnant, if anything, you know, if you're in that kind of, if you've got health anxiety or anything like that, it can be so easily triggered by hearing something negative and referring it to yourself. And that is the last thing that I want anybody to feel. But also, you know, I have, in the grand scheme of things, a really tiny corner of the internet, really. But I just thought, if anybody can hear this and they go, oh my God, you know, I'm not alone. Because for me, people came back with such, you know, all sorts of responses. But it helped me as well to hear that actually, oh, okay, I'm not the only one that's ever been through this and all this kind of stuff. And I, you know, for me, no one's spoken to me about this really, apart from my mum, who, you know, my mum had 9 miscarriages between my sister and I. So I've always known about them. But again, it's that thing. And also, it's one of those things, and I have to say this really, when people have a miscarriage, you know, I didn't realise the impact that it had. I think it's, again, one of those words that's just like, oh, you know, you don't understand really the severity of what it causes. And it's not just physically. Again, you know, for me, it was emotionally and mentally something that, you know, I'm quite, even though I've got this health anxiety, when it comes down to it, I'm quite strong. But this, you know, it completely knocked me. And I thought, like, people need to know that it's okay to feel that way. And so it's an important conversation, I really, really do think.
And I think, again, what we don't talk about enough is that actually when you miscarry, your body goes through a postnatal period.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes when you miscarry, your body goes through a mini labour, you know. So actually the hormones are still doing exactly what they would do if you had birthed your baby. Yeah. And so this is why we, you know, we've been campaigning for years now which is now happening,
yes,
which
is brilliant,
where people can take leave.
Yeah,
yes, which is amazing. And I hope with that, people are now going to have much more open conversations about it, because they will say, I've had a miscarriage, I'm going to take some time off, because your body does need to heal, and your hormones need to settle, and, you know, you will be very raw and open for a little while, like you would, you know, in the postnatal phase. And I think understanding that makes you realise how awful it's been for such a long time, that people just do this all in.
Why do you think that is? Because people ask me that all the time, and my honest answer is, I've got no idea. I don't know what this stigma is, why it's there.
I think it's lack of education. I think it's because, like you say, we go, oh, well, you had a miscarriage. You know, it's almost like it just all went away. I don't think people understand what actually happens during a miscarriage sometimes. I really don't, because people don't, maybe like you say, people don't want to alarm or worry, and so they don't talk about what it can look like. And so it's become this word that's so normalized, but with no emotion attached to it. And I think hopefully the conversation is changing, and the narrative around miscarriage is changing, and I hope that will change. What do you think, Lex, in your training with it all?
I don't know, I was just thinking about this really, and I was just thinking about the fact that we know people where both the expectant mum and partner have both taken leave after a miscarriage because of the fact they just need some time. They just need to take some time to sit with this huge change, this huge news, and I'm sorry to say, but this dream that's been lost.
Yeah.
You know, because of course, as soon as you see that line on that pregnancy test, that baby's basically here, aren't they, in your mind?
Absolutely.
And the fantasy of what that family unit now looks like is well and truly underway. So I think that, again, I don't exactly know, and I find it ridiculous that you would need to go straight back to work afterwards. I mean, how has that even ever been a thing? But is it this stiff upper lip? We just get on with it. We don't talk about unpleasant things, you know. But it can be very harmful doing that.
And certainly in terms of the body, when people come to the clinic after, so I specialise in pre and postnatal massage, and when people come after a miscarriage, the body is very postnatal. You can feel there's a hypermobility in the joints, you know, there's some tension all around the abdomen, and you have to release it like you would. So you're like, well, actually, that shows you what a physical thing it is as well, you know?
Do you know, that's so important. I think you're exactly right. It is complete uneducation about this, because, you know, even for me, even to be totally honest with you, even me hearing you say that, I had a miscarriage, and it was probably, 2 months ago now, and it was very early, this one. So I thought, to be honest, you know, this is probably going to be maybe easier for me to deal with. But the physical side of this one for me personally has been really, really difficult. And just even hearing you say that, like, you know, it's normal to have this or that, and I'm like, really? Okay, just that, you know, makes me feel instantly more relieved. And it is that, and I really do think that people need to talk about it, because if you don't know, it's scary. It's a really scary thing to go through. It's so unnerving. And if no one talks about it, how on earth are you supposed to know? Like, this is, it's so, so desperately sad, but this is, it's okay, and you're going to be all right, and please don't panic. You know, it would have been invaluable for me to know that, you know, how the process kind of works, really.
And in terms of, like, you know, when we talk about sort of not triggering people, and I totally get that, and we will always, whenever we talk about anything like this, we always do trigger warnings. But what I have noticed in the clinic is that some women who have come in post miscarriage have been really angry that, yeah. that they hadn't spoken to anybody, that they didn't even realize that this could happen, you yeah. know, somehow they've managed to kind of go through life and they haven't known anybody, or they haven't spoken to anybody who's had a miscarriage, and it has hit them with such shock that they've been really cross about it, and they're like, if it happens so regularly, why yeah. are we not warned mm. that it is a possibility? And I thought, oh, okay, that's really important, actually. I think, you know, that could have helped a little bit, maybe.
Exactly. Mm. You should know that there are these possibilities. And I guess that's why there's this stigma attached to the 12-week thing, which, again, you know, I really dislike this 12-week thing that everybody has to be completely silent. You know, it's totally up to you. If you are, why can't you? You know, anything, to be honest, yeah. you know, it can happen at any point, but anything can to anyone, or, you know, not just in pregnancy yeah. or whatever. If you're feeling this way and it's your own, you want to say that you're pregnant, of course, you do whatever you want to and you feel it. I know that the 12-week thing is important, you know, for medical purposes and how the baby is developed by that point. But, you know, as you know, these silent miscarriages that I had were in the second trimester, and it can still happen. And actually, you know, it's just, I think it's so personal, and you shouldn't be made to feel anything.
I agree. And Kira, I remember thinking myself in the first trimesters that I would tell close friends and family, because I remember having this conversation with my husband. If anything was to happen and I was to have a miscarriage, I would tell these people anyway.
Exactly.
And I would need their support exactly. to get through the experience. So, you know, I think that can be important as well.
I feel that because of the one I had recently, actually, I didn't tell anybody that I was pregnant because I thought, oh, you know, whatever. And then when I had another miscarriage, I then had to tell people, oh, yeah. I was pregnant, but then this has happened again, and it was worse for me. And I thought, you know what? It was much better for me that I, you know, didn't have to do any of that explaining, really. And it was just, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if you don't mind, because I know you talk about this quite openly in your Instagram account, you had a couple of quite different experiences, not with the most recent one that you've been talking about now, but the two that you had in your second trimester. Would you mind talking? I think one was in the UK and one was in Sweden, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's right. I found the first time I had a silent miscarriage, which if anyone it doesn't know, it's when there are no warning signs that you've mm-hmm. lost a baby, and it's your body just hasn't done its thing and been able to, you know, to reject it naturally, I suppose. But I found out the first time at my 12-week scan. So I went in, you know, naively, just like, oh yeah, I've had, you know, two kids, whatever. And that's when I found out, you know, and it's that dreaded thing. So, you know, I'm very sorry. There's no heartbeat. And I couldn't quite understand what he was saying, you know. And he was like, you know, have you had any discomfort or anything like that? And I was saying, no, like, you know, I've still got like sore boobs and I feel sick and like, you know, what do you mean? I could not understand what he was saying. And to be honest, it was very, you know, maybe for me it was a different experience, but it was incredibly clinical. There was no emotion attached to it, and it was sort of like, we need the room now, so I'm very sorry, you know. And I was like, what on earth is happening? And then, yeah, you know, and then the processes that follow for me, I had to have an operation called a DNC, which is when they effectively clean everything out and you know, and then you sort of start again. And the second time the same thing happened, but this was a little bit later. I got to that 12 week mark that, you know, you think is the be all and end all. If you reach that, everything's fine. So I had that scan and everything was okay. And then we went to Sweden because we spend sort of half our time there anyway. And I just got to, I think it was 14 weeks, and there was nothing, to be honest with you. It was just a feeling that I had, and I just thought, I just know there's something not right. I just felt it in my mind.
Yeah, that intuition.
It was
right?
So strange. Yeah, it was. It was so intuitive, and everyone was like, "Oh, you know, Kira's health anxiety. You know, it's not. You're being ridiculous." And I said, "I'm not. I have to go. I have to just check this out. I know I've just had a scan 2 weeks ago, but I have to." And that, yeah, we went to A&E, and the same thing happened, and it was a very different experience in Sweden, I have to say. They like to do things very naturally, and I was given the option to have some, you know, some tablets to effectively, I had to give birth, and that was that was really tough. And in the end, you know, I had to hang.
Did you do that in hospital or at home, Kira?
Because it was later on, they said I had to be in hospital. So I stayed
in hospital
with somebody. And to be honest, it happened. Once it starts, it's incredibly quick. And thank God I was there, because I had a few complications with that. And I ended up having to have surgery anyway. That one was particularly difficult, because it was just a lot thrown at you, and so unexpectedly as well.
Yeah.
So it's been 3 in a year. So I just need a little bit of a break
Kira.
Now.
Of course. And this is the thing that we find quite often, particularly when it's quite clinical in like in the UK, is that you get clinically told that's it now, and then off you go. And because people don't talk about it, people don't know what to do about it. And there's no advice on how to care for yourself, really. And this is why when Alexis and I set up the Mother Box, which are kind of like nurturing gift boxes for pregnancy in the postnatal period, we were like, we'd really like to do a box for women who have had a miscarriage with a hormone balancing tea and a healing bath soak, and just, you know, a kind of a little roller for calm. And it's something that would just really acknowledge your physical healing. And I remember sort of at the beginning, people were going, oh, but isn't that a bit, you know, isn't that a bit scary? And isn't it, aren't you sort of preying on people? And we were like, no, do you know what we're doing? We're trying to provide something that says, here, you really need to kind of physically heal from this, and something that a family member could provide. And the feedback was amazing.
We do them for miscarriage, and we do them for stillbirth and neonatal loss. And Becky hasn't mentioned there that is also a part of it, is that we had women contacting us saying, I really love what you do, but I've been through this experience. I've, you know, it wouldn't it be wonderful if you could create something very nurturing for us? And you know, don't use this term loosely, but who have experienced loss and you know, and with stillbirth and the neonatal death as well. And so that's why we just feel like we need to acknowledge women and that side of motherhood as well.
100%. You know, I've had friends that go through it, and that honestly is, if I knew about that, I would have bought 100 of those parties. That's so important. That's really lovely.
We got sort of some women from the loss community who either had repeated miscarriages or women who had had stillbirths, and each box has a little booklet, so with words of it, so we wanted like some really encouraging words of support from women who had also had repeated miscarriages or had also suffered a stillbirth. So it was just a nice way of kind of going, do you know what, you're not alone, and actually you need to really look after yourself. I'm really glad we did it. It was really important to just make that change, I think.
We were creating them again, like everything that Becky and I do with our experience abroad in the UK and the way that we practice. It was a really holistic approach, and there was, you know, movement for grief explained in there. We had a yoga teacher who's talked about how to move your body post loss, post miscarriage, post stillbirth.
Wow.
And like Becky said, we had the tea, we had the bath soak for healing. And you know, we would love that they weren't needed. Of course we would, more than anything. But we also want something to be out there that just, again, acknowledges what women go through and is a part, sadly, of life and motherhood.
Yeah, it is. And it, like you said, that's so important. It is part of life. And I think, I you know, I haven't seen anything like that, actually. I really haven't seen, you know, that kind of care and for women like that. And it's incredible.
Did you do anything for your physical healing? Did anyone sort of give you any advice or tips, or was there anything that you accessed that helped you?
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, love.
No, nothing at all. And that's, again, I think, you know, maybe it's a different thing. Like you're saying, you've had experiences in different countries, and maybe it is something here, because nothing. You know, for me, the first 2 times I had the operation, and then, you know, you're sort of done. And actually in Sweden, they didn't offer anything. I think they always say, you know, if you need to talk to someone, there's a helpline. But there's also, I think, a stigma attached to a helpline. And you just think like, my experience is unique, and I don't want to call it, it's difficult. I think it's really difficult to be able to go and just talk to somebody who you,
I can completely see that. Another thing, a real sort of bugbear of ours, is that after you've been through miscarriage, there is often, like you say, not a huge amount of support. And the other thing is that you have to have, I think it's in the UK still, 3 miscarriages before we explore it any further. And I don't know if, I'm assuming this is something that you've experienced as well, which I think it just feels extremely difficult for somebody who's been through a loss like that. But I just wonder your experience at the moment, and obviously in the UK, between the UK and Sweden, are you still involved with health professionals? Is there a plan going forward? Where are you at with it?
To be honest, exactly. So unless you've had 3 miscarriages, then, you know, it's just a very common thing, and you've had some bad luck and that's that. But I've gone down the private route now. And to be honest, it's mainly for my anxiety, because for me to have to wait, you know, and of course the NHS are under ridiculous pressure at the moment. And I don't think I would be able to wait for a very long time to kind of figure out what's going on. So I've, and because my mum again has had so many miscarriages, she knows the right people, and thank God I've got her, because, you know, and again, saying I didn't have support is wrong, because I have her, and she, because she's been through all this. And so every experience or symptom or this or that that I have gone through, she is there and she knows. So if there's anything to worry about, you know, she knows. And my bless her, because it's been, honestly, it's been a full-time job for her this year, and I don't know how she's still yes, this is my daughter and I'm going to keep her as my daughter forever. She's been amazing. But yeah, so now I've had some, you know, we're at the very beginning stages of kind of this exploratory thing. But to be totally honest, I just, after we've had these kind of tests and they, you know, they find something or they don't, you know, that's very been made very aware to me that it could still just be one of those things and bad luck. But, you know, it's quite strange after having 2 children that they wouldn't maybe be able to kind of figure something out. So I think once they do or they don't, for me personally, I just need to kind of close the door on it for a while, and see, you know, maybe in a couple of years, if I'm able to go down that route again, then maybe. But for now, it's been a bit overwhelming. So I just kind of want to go, I just need to stop thinking about all of this for a bit. So
absolutely. Kira, you've been through the third trimester 3 times in 1 year.
Yeah, I mean,
during a pandemic.
Yeah,
God. That is. Oh. But it's huge, though, isn't it? It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, even if it's quite plain sailing, you know, from having your 2 boys beforehand, that the first trimester can take its toll. It can take a lot out of you.
Yeah,
exhaustion wise. I don't blame you. I think that sounds like a very good idea at the moment.
Just give it.
Yeah, definitely. I think also when you have had a previous miscarriage, there is that sort of anxiety when you get pregnant again. You're like, well, is it going to be okay? Is it not? And that's really draining. And again, we don't talk enough about, you know, the effect that anxiety has on the body and how mentally and physically draining that is. So for us, it always comes down to rest, you know, taking rest and taking time. And also, I think in our society, kind of with a lack of, I mean, I'm not religious, there's, you know, not with the lack of that sort of religion, we lose a lot of ceremony and ritual around big things that happen to us. And in other cultures, in one of my trainings, one of the things, so post-section, you would have a releasing massage to allow your body to fully release. And then you would have a nice hot bath. And then you come back to the bed and you have a ritual called closing the bones. And you have these beautiful cloths and you get tied quite tightly around your shoulders and your ribs and your hips. And it kind of binds you and it sort of seals you back up again. They sort of say, spiritually, you know, it's kind of closing the body back up until it's ready again.
Where do they do that?
They do it. It's a South American and actually Asian cultures and Morocco they do a similar kind of thing. There's in a lot of kind of Eastern cultures and then you have like you can have it anyway. You can have it privately or you can have it done with all your sort of women around you, and often they'll hold a piece of you while you're in your binds, and then afterwards the binds are released and it's almost like, okay, let's start again now. So it's like a kind of, it's almost like a ceremony that says to the body, we've got you, that's done, let's move on now, you know. And you just think, how beautiful
that is. Amazing.
It just holds space for it, doesn't it, Becky, as well as it as well as the therapy of touch itself, which obviously as you are doing the closing the bones, you are hands on body, you are physically connected to the woman. I think it's also just it's the holding the space, and it's the acknowledgement of what's happening, which is huge.
Definitely. Absolutely. finally, we always like to finish an episode by asking you to share some of your words of wisdoms with anyone going through, you know, what you've been going through. So if you met a lady who had just miscarried and was feeling all over the place, like, what would you say? What would be your words of advice?
I think you need to take the best, and I know it's so simple, but somebody said to me, just take every day as it comes. And I think that's such an easy mm-hmm. thing to say, but when you really think about that, it's like, I'm going to get through today, and if today is a day where I'm not even thinking about that and I feel quite happy, then just go with that. And if it's mm-hmm. a day where it feels overwhelming for no reason at all and you can't comprehend it, that's okay too, just mm-hmm. to go with it, and mm-hmm. and then let yourself feel those things, and also mm-hmm. surround yourself with people who are valuable for you at that time. So whether that's somebody who, if you want to talk about it, you know, surround or speak to somebody who will talk to you about it. If you don't, surround yourself with people who you know will just, you know, for me, that person is my sister, who she just makes me feel, I don't need to talk about it, I don't want to talk about it, but she's just this presence that makes me feel like everything is okay. And if I wanted to speak about it, she would be there. So I think it's just everything you're feeling is, I promise you, it's normal, and it will feel better. And if, you know, I've got friends who have gone through this and bounce back immediately and are totally strong mentally, and that's okay too. There is no mm-hmm. right way to deal with any of this. It's so unique mm-hmm. as it is with babies and birth and all of that. It's so you know, and also I found when I gave birth, the best piece of advice was to not listen to anyone else's advice. It just was like, it's for you, isn't it? And be yeah. educated, absolutely, but it's you, your instinct is everything.
Yeah. Absolutely. Really, and you're right, actually. I think sometimes we always say, you know, take what feels helpful and disregard the rest, because
yeah.
I think sometimes you don't want to suppress somebody's intuition. And like you say, I think you know, like Lex always says, you're the expert of yourself yeah. and your baby or, you know, any of these situations. So mm-hmm. follow your own instincts as well. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kira, for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute joy having you, darling.
Yeah, Thank you so much. Thanks, I really appreciate it.
Thanks once again to the lovely Kira for joining us today and talking so honestly about her motherhood journey. If you've been touched by our conversation and want to know more, please check out our show notes for further details of where you can access support for miscarriage.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about the work that we do, look out for our books, The Little Book of Self-Care for New Mums and The Little Book of Self-Care for Mums-to-Be, where we will talk further about birth, parenthood, relationships and much more.
We've really enjoyed this episode. We're sure that you all have your own stories of your bubbers and their love for our partner this season, Sophie Le Giraffe, and we would love for you to share them with us.
Send us your photos and your stories to our Instagram @notesfromthemotherbox, and don't forget to tag @SophieLeGiraffeUK on Facebook and Instagram to share your pics with her too.
Join us again next week for more chats with another amazing guest.
See you next time on Notes from the Motherbox.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.